the 911 phone calls that occurred in the case of Karen Reed played in court just the other day. 911 calls are interesting because they capture people in the heat of that moment. And to me, they're some of the most revealing pieces of audio I think that we can hear. I mean, just think of some of the ones that we've heard, you know, so far from the past that you just kind of go, huh? Or, yeah, they sound legitimately disturbed, you know?
Yeah, it's a raw moment. You don't have time to put together a response or how you feel or think. It's a raw emotion, fight or flight coming right out at you.
Although it is funny because people don't realize that when you dial 911, you are recorded immediately. Like it's, you click over to recording. So while it's ringing, it's also recording you. So if someone's sitting there like trying to get their story ready or something, that's on tape too, before the operator or before the 911 dispatcher answers. And that can be very damning as well, because a lot of people don't realize that little factoid. Well, the courtroom was enveloped in sorrow as recordings of the frantic 911 calls made during the disappearance and discovery of Boston police officer John O'Keefe played during Monday's session at Karen Reed's murder trial. Family members were seen in tears as the reality of the tragic events were audibly revisited. We're going to play some interesting pieces from the courtroom the other day in just a moment. Canton Police Sergeant Sean Goody took the stand detailing the events following the early morning calls on January 29th of 2022 that led to the grim discovery of O'Keefe's body on Fairview Road. The atmosphere grew tense as prosecutor Adam Lally replayed the emergency calls, with one call revealing the moment Reed and her companions found O'Keefe unresponsive. Subsequent events unfolded tragically as Karen Reed herself became suicidal, according to Sergeant Goody's testimony regarding police intervention due to threats of self-harm. Adding to the trial's complexity, Canton Police Lieutenant Paul Gallagher described the scene where O'Keefe was found as unique due to the snowy conditions that preserved key evidence like footprints and a broken cocktail glass. However, Gallagher's methods, particularly the use of a leaf blower to clear the scene and collection of blood evidence in red Solo cups, were heavily scrutinized by defense attorney Alan Jackson. Jackson questioned the sterility and integrity of the evidence collection process, suggesting potential cross-contamination. Let's hear about the fucking leaf blower. My God.
Lieutenant, with reference to that process, how far deep into the snow were you able to go with using that leaf blower in that manner?
We get almost to the ground, bare ground.
As far as sort of a surface area, like how much of that area where Mr. O'Keefe was found were you able to use the leaf blower on?
It was approximately a 6x6, 7x7 type area.
And from that area, what, if anything, in addition to the cocktail glass pieces that you are going to testify to and the red spots on the ground, what, if anything else, did you observe?
Yeah, we didn't observe anything at that point. Anything else, just the blood in the glass.
Now, Lieutenant, during the time that you were on scene, with reference to the neighborhood in general, how many people did you observe sort of come out of their house at any point in time that you were there?
I didn't observe anybody ever come out of their house.
And that includes the residents that you're in front of, as well as any other residences along that street. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, at some point, about how long a period of time, if you know, were you on scene that particular morning?
Approximately 50 minutes, 45 to 50 minutes.
And following that, where did you go?
We brought the exhibits back to Canton Police Headquarters.
And by that, you mean the glass and what you had collected of the blood?
Yep, we took 6 blood samples, yes.
Okay, and how were you able to sort of collect the blood samples on scene?
Well, the blood samples, because they were frozen, we debated on how to collect it. We didn't think swabbing was going to be easy to do if it was frozen. So we decided on finding some type of temporary plastic evidence container. We were able to find large cups, and we took 6 samples. We bagged the 6 samples, and Sergeant Lank transported them back to Canton Police Headquarters.
I'm not going to fault him a lot on the the red Solo cups being used because they were just trying to get it while they could in the middle of the snowstorm. It's like, let's just grab something really quick and then we can transfer it. And if there's a chain of custody showing, okay, we got this, then she said they bagged it. Okay. It sounds good. But the fucking leaf blower?
The leaf blower blows everything to shreds because there's no continuity. I mean, it's just a freaking tornado.
Yeah.
Tornado out over the crime scene is what it is.
Yeah. That one.
How do you get any evidence out of that?
Here's another thing I don't get. Were they talking about preserved evidence like footprints? And by the time they were investigating the crime scene, snow had been coming down pretty heavy at that point. Now, people are going to argue with me on this. Like, well, at the moment, you're right. At the moment that it took place, when he was hit or whatever the hell happened, when his body was dropped in the yard, you're right. The snow was not crazy at that point. But by the time they started realizing he was out there and they found the body, it was coming down hard. Like, you couldn't really even identify there was a body out there. The only person who knew where a body was or went straight to it was Karen Reed. She walked over to it, and nobody else seemed to know that. I mean, they drove by. They're like, "What? There's nothing up." Like, "Oh, there it is. Yes, there's something over here," because the snow had been falling that much. So I'm confused on the footprints, because the footprints that would have been made earlier in the evening before the snow came down would have been completely covered by the time the snow was coming down. And we can see in the footage of the police body cam footage just how much the snow was coming down. So what footprints are we even talking about at this point?
Yeah. And you and I are from winter states.
Yeah.
So for people who are listening who don't quite understand what snow is about, there's light snows and then there's blizzard snows. And when it's coming down an inch or two an hour, it does cover footprints. When it's coming down kind of light, maybe a little windy, footprints still can hang around. You can at least see an indentation, although it's covered. But when it's really coming down, you can't see where anybody has walked.
Yeah. I mean, you can go walking. You can go to your mailbox sometimes. And by the time you turn around and come back, your footprints to the mailbox are gone already.
And that's because of the wind. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly what, but certainly judging by the video that we've seen, it looked pretty windy. It looked like it was drifting everywhere. So the footprints, I don't even understand where they're even coming from on that, unless somebody was by the body previous and they just came to at that moment, or unless they're talking about like Karen Reed's footprints when she was realizing he was dead and trying to give him mouth to mouth. I could see there'll be footprints there then. But if we're talking about earlier in the day, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And why the leaf blower? Why are we taking a leaf blower out?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, even if he were buried in the snow, I would think you'd want to dig around the scene just to collect evidence. You wouldn't blow it.
Yeah.
It just screams of ineptitude. And I don't know. Maybe they haven't done a lot of training about crime scene evidence collection, but this just seems like a no-brainer. Don't use a leaf blower or a lawnmower over an evidence
crime scene. Bring out the John Deere. Let's do a little mowing here.
Or even
a snowblower. Anything.
Or a snowblower for that matter.
Yeah. Further controversy emerged over the credibility of firefighter paramedic Kate McLaughlin, who testified about Reed's alleged admission at the scene. Defense attorney David Yannetti accused McLaughlin of perjury, presenting new photographs that purportedly show a closer relationship between McLaughlin and Caitlin Elbert, daughter of the homeowners where O'Keefe was found, than previously admitted. The accusation aims to challenge the forthcoming testimony of Caitlin Elbert, setting the stage for more intense legal scrutiny. I don't want to be too confused by this one. This is them trying to make it because she didn't say something right about this over here. Then over here, none of her testimony is credible. She's not the only one who testified about what was said at that scene. There's a lot of people who testified of what Karen Reed said at that scene. She's not the sole witness to say she did or did not say something. But if they can start putting some doubt there on one person, You got to be careful. The day concluded with the procedural debates out of the jury's presence, focusing on the admissibility of evidence about McLaughlin's relationship and potential biases. Judge Beverly Cano stated that a decision on the matter would be made in the coming days, which could significantly impact the testimonies going ahead. So, leaf blower, crime scenes.
What a debacle.
It is, I mean, I just because one thing happens doesn't mean it's something else. Because they used a leaf blower doesn't mean it's a cover-up, doesn't mean it's a conspiracy, doesn't mean they killed him. It means somebody was an idiot. And they maybe in the heat of what they were doing or whatever things or thoughts going through one's mind, that's the best thing that they thought they could do. Hindsight sometimes 20/20, you go, shit, that was not a good idea. But at the moment, maybe sounded like a good idea. And I don't know. You know, there was a lot of drunk people there, not the ones that responded to the scene, obviously, but the ones that were in the house. You know, maybe I got this. I got a leaf blower. Let's try doing this. Okay, let's try doing it. Like, and then like, shit, that's probably not a great idea at a crime scene. Although at the moment in time, a lot of people didn't even realize it was a crime scene either. That should also be taken into account.
And I think you just brought up a really good point. At the time, here was an injured man that they needed to get some help to. They weren't thinking this was a crime scene in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Something had happened to him, and he was in trouble, and that's what they were focusing on.
Yeah.
The crime scene talk kind of comes a little bit later.
After the opportunity to look at it as a crime scene had expired. And yeah, so there's a lot of, you got to understand the mindset of everybody at each individual moment in this case for it to truly make sense. It's so easy to look back and go, how did they not see this or that? Because at that time, they didn't think of it that way. They weren't looking at it in that direction. Again, I just don't know that we're ever truly going to know the answer to any of this because I think it was a lot of bad decisions. I think, you know, people are incapable in some ways in this of not ever recalling exactly what happened because of the alcohol intoxication. So are we ever going to get an answer? I don't know that we are. But there will ultimately be some sort of verdict at the end of the day here. But that verdict could be exactly what I just said of we don't know and a hung jury.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.